This is the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman, in for Brian Mackey. And we're going to start our weekly politics roundtable with some reporting out of the Chicago Tribune earlier this week. It's about how rape crisis centers across Illinois have been struggling since losing millions of dollars in federal funding. The story is called After Federal Cuts, Illinois Rape Crisis Centers Ask State for Help. It's essential that services be there. And with me now is the reporter on that story, Jonathan Bullington, senior reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Jonathan, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
To start, can you remind us briefly about the sort of work that rape crisis centers in Illinois do?
Of course. It's a variety of things. Some of the main services they provide are they operate 24-hour crisis hotlines for survivors. They can connect, they can offer counseling or connect survivors to other counseling services. They do medical advocacy. So if a survivor shows up, goes to the hospital, a medical advocate will go to that emergency room and be with that person to try to support them in whatever way possible. They do outreach and education and really try to help a survivor through all of the stages, everything from helping them navigate filing a police report, if that's something a survivor wants to do, to sitting with them in court even.
You spoke with several people who work for rape crisis centers or have worked for them in the past. What can you tell us about what the work environment has been like for them even before the last few years when these federal cuts kicked in?
So this work has always been very difficult, obviously. And there has always been this pressure, this financial pressure, even before this most recent loss. I think I spoke with a woman who works for a national organization, and she had told me that a lot of these programs had had waiting lists for counseling services, and that generally the infrastructure nationally for sexual assault services has not been where it needs to be over the years. So it's always been a very difficult job trying to do as much as you can with what you have.
These federal cuts that you talk about in your story are in grant money from something called the Victims of Crime Act. Tell us about that funding and what's happened to that money in recent years.
Sure. Victims of Crime Act, the acronym that is most often used is VOCA. And generally speaking, this is a federal fund, and it money from federal prosecutions, assessments, fines, penalties, et cetera, are deposited into this fund. And then it goes out to victim services across the country. And it, not just crisis centers, of course, it can be all kinds of services for the victims of crimes. Congress put a cap on the amount of money that can be dispersed from this fund. And that was done in part to try to stabilize it, to make sure that there is always money there. But that deposits into that fund have dropped to historically low levels, I'm told, over the years. And that is due in large part to just a decline in federal prosecutions. There have not been as many of these sort of high-profile cases where you see that kind of big fines or fees or deposits into that fund. And so we see the corresponding drop in both the deposits to that fund and then the cap that is set on disbursements has dropped as well. I think it had been at about $1.9 billion, I want to say, in previous fiscal years. And this past fiscal year, that was dropped. It had been proposed at $1.2 billion, but then was raised slightly to $1.3. But that's still about a $600 million loss in that disbursement nationally.
And how have rape crisis centers across Illinois responded to this drop in funding? What are some of the painful cuts that they've had to make?
Yeah, well, it's been severe. I think the Illinois Coalition Against Sexual Assault took a look at this, and what they found was about a little over half of these crisis centers have either reduced staff or frozen hiring. There's been five satellite offices that have closed, 14 hospitals in, these are all in Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. I mentioned earlier that when a survivor shows up in a emergency room, a crisis center will be called and they will send a medical advocate to try to support that survivor. And it's really one of those first points of contact that these crisis centers can have with a survivor. So it is really a crucial service that they provide. But 14 hospitals are no longer have that because of these cuts. Wait lists for counseling appointments have grown at some centers, which again, you can imagine from the perspective of a survivor to get to that point where you realize that you need counseling, and to be told that it's not there right away when you need it can be really devastating. And you've got a lot of crisis centers that have had to turn to community fundraising, and that they're scrambling to look for other sources, which in and of itself can be taxing when you have this staff stretched thin to have to like devote time and effort to try to find other pots of money can be difficult. And I think the coalition had estimated that the pace they're on right now statewide is to serve about 1,400 fewer survivors or their families than the previous fiscal year.
So advocates have been going to Springfield to try to get support for an increase in state funding to make up for these federal cuts that we've been talking about. What have they been learning from lawmakers?
Well, yeah, that's correct. So just to back up for a second, a state human services funding for these crisis centers over the last 20 years, I'm told, has been relatively flat, about $7.5 million a year. And the ask is to bump that up to $20 million. And so they had a rally in Springfield not long ago, about 300 folks showed up. And, you know, I think certainly what I'm told is that there are lawmakers who are supportive of this. They understand the need. They understand the vital role that these crisis centers play in helping survivors across the state and the importance of doing that. However, as we all know, there's not an unlimited pot of money in Springfield. The budget is tight, as always seems to be tight. And there are a lot of competing asks, education, funding to local governments. You've got, asylum seekers and migrants arriving in the state and the need to try to find some money to help those folks. So it's difficult. You know, I don't know that anyone can say for certain whether they think they're going to be able to meet that $20 million mark. I would note that that Human Services did, I think it was last spring, I want to say, that they were able to redirect some earmark about $5 million in a different federal grant program to these crisis centers. So that's certainly helpful. And what I was told is that money really, in many ways, helped take some of the sting off of the federal VOCA reduction. You know, like when I went and told you about, you know, the 14 hospitals and the satellite offices closing and staff reductions, some of these centers said, you know, it would have been much worse if not for that.
Well, we'll
that
have
$5 million infusion.
Well, we appreciate you following this issue. Jonathan Bullington, senior reporter for the Chicago Tribune. We'll have a link to his story at our website, 21stshow.org. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
This is the 21st Show. If you're just tuning in, it's time for our weekly look at national politics. Now, Linda Kenyon, who covers the Congress for Illinois Public Media, was not able to join us live today, but she spoke with our producer, Christine Hatfield, last night. And we'll spend the next few minutes listening to some of the things Linda had to say. She started off talking about the aftermath of the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore last week. It's had a profound effect on commerce because the collapse basically cut off the port of Baltimore. A few ships are moving now, but it'll be a while before things are fully up and running. And as Linda told us, that could cause problems for farmers who are waiting on new equipment, even out here in Illinois.
The Port of Baltimore is not only a large regional port on the eastern seaboard, but it's a very important port for the entire national commerce. And two of the main items that come into the Port of Baltimore are automobiles, which can be moved to other ports on the eastern seaboard, and farm equipment. And the farm equipment is very hard to transfer to another port. So, especially given the fact that the port itself is essentially shut down, except for a little bit of a channel that has been reopened, but it's very limited in terms of commerce. So for farmers who are waiting for tractor equipment, et cetera, this could eventually cause a major problem for the farming community, because the longer this lasts, the worse it may get. And again, this is a major port when it comes to not only regional but national commerce, and it will affect the entire national supply chain, certainly for things like farm equipment, if this lasts much longer.
So just how much longer could it be until the port is up and running? Here's what Linda had to say about that.
You know, all that they've been telling us, in fact, the White House press secretary made a statement Thursday saying that they're trying very hard to try and reopen the Port of Baltimore as soon as humanly possible. So what does that mean? Well, first they have to get rid of the wreckage of the collapsed span of the bridge that fell on top of a cargo vessel while the cargo vessel was trying to get out of the Port of Baltimore, fully loaded, but lost power. It had at that time notified the authorities that there was a mayday, sent out an alarm, and police on both sides of the bridge shut down the bridge to traffic. And unfortunately, they weren't able to get the construction workers off the bridge. There were six construction workers who were on top of the bridge working on filling potholes in the middle of the night. And they plunged into the water, and most of them in their cars. And so they have to get those cars out of the water. They have to get the damaged vessel out of the water. And the sheer weight of the bridge span resting on top of that cargo vessel has been so heavy that the vessel itself is resting on the bottom. So this is a major salvage operation. It's also a major dangerous operation because they have to put divers down in the water. They have to use underwater cutting tools to get bridge span, the steel, cut into smaller pieces so they can move it out. And they say that the visibility is so bad that they can't even see their own hand in front of their faces.
We also spoke with Linda about how Congress will be back in action next week. One of the big questions is whether aid to Ukraine is going to get passed, and if so, in what form? And here's what Linda had to say about all that.
Yeah, you know, the Senate did pass a bill by a wide bipartisan margin, and it was not taken up in the House. House Speaker Mike Johnson had basically decided to hold off on bringing it to the floor, in part because of a lot of concerns from House conservatives, who were concerned especially about the amount of spending, but also they wanted something in return. For example, they wanted to make the aid to Ukraine, at least a portion of it, in the form of a loan. Now, there's been a lot of opposition among Republicans and among the Democrats when it comes to that sort of thing, because how can you make a country like Ukraine, which is in ruins from war and now has a completely faltering economy, how can you make them pay back aid that they desperately need in order to defend themselves against Russia? So that is going to be a major bone of contention, a major discussion point, and a matter of great controversy. So that's one of the things that has been held up. We also have another added chapter to this story, and that comes in the form of Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. She was very upset with House Speaker Mike Johnson before the Congress went on its two-week Easter break. It comes back, by the way, next week. And it was very upset. She was very upset over the fact that there was a government funding bill that was passed to stop a shutdown of the federal government. That was passed on March 22nd. And she felt that it was completely out of tune with conservative values, that Speaker Johnson made too many promises and too many compromises with Democrats. And she wants to issue a motion to vacate. That means she wants to get him out of his job. Now, you may remember that this is what happened to former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, and it paralyzed the House and, by extension, the Senate for 3 weeks where no business could get done. So if Marjorie Taylor Greene were to protest this Ukraine aid package in its current form, she could, in fact, paralyze the entire legislative branch of government again if other conservatives go along with her. I will say that at this point, there are a lot of conservative Republicans who don't seem to have an appetite for that right now. And not only because of the damage that it did to their running of Congress in the last time that this Speaker of the House situation came up, but also because it's an election year. And if the House Republicans who are in the majority show they cannot govern, that could really come back to bite them at the ballot box.
That's Linda Kenyon, Washington correspondent for Illinois Public Media. In order to make our schedules meet, she spoke last night with one of our producers, Christine Hatfield. Coming up after a short break, book and food lovers will meet up in Urbana this weekend for the 17th annual Edible Book Festival. We'll talk about just what an edible book is and the creative ways people have fun with their food at the event. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.